Welcome to United Voices, a podcast by United Way Waterloo Region Communities that shares the powerful stories of the people and organizations driving change across our region. My name is Jill Laurie, and I'm part of the team behind United Voices. In today's episode, my colleague Brian Cam is joined by Sarah Castleman, Executive Director of the Sexual Assault Support Center of Waterloo Region, often referred to by the acronym SASC. The conversation covers some tough topics: gender-based violence, the reality of sex trafficking, and how the lack of shelter beds is leaving many survivors without a safe place to turn. You'll hear about the challenges, but also the deep strength and resilience of survivors, and how we can all
Thanks
play
for
a role
joining
in creating
us on the show,
safer,
Sarah.
I wanted
to start off by asking you to unpack for our listeners a little bit about the work of the Sexual Assault Support Center.
Very happy to do that. As I was sharing right before we began recording, I've been at the center in various capacities for 23 years. And so I feel like I've seen so much growth and change in the Sexual Assault Support Center of Waterloo Region over the last two plus decades in our community. So since 1989, our center has been supporting local survivors of sexual violence. Our team listens, facilitates healing, and celebrates the incredible resiliency of the survivors that use our services. We also work towards prevention and social change. And we have a whole range of services, everything from a 24-hour support line to individual counseling to group counseling to support through legal processes like court, police. We have a dedicated anti-human trafficking program, very busy in our community. And we also have a really strong public education program that's educating the community and working towards something better for everyone.
Great. Thanks, Sarah. Now, recently, the YWCA of Cambridge had opened up a brand new women's shelter, and this was responding to a need for shelter for women in the region, given the realities around gender-based violence. Can you start by sharing an overview of the challenges unhoused women face when it comes to gender-based violence?
Absolutely. It's an interesting thing. So I've been doing work in gender-based violence, specifically sexual violence, for many, many years. In our community. And until this year, I never really had to delve into the world of women's houselessness, of homelessness and housing in the way that I've had to in the last year. What happened was the only dedicated women's shelter for unhoused women in our community closed down last year. And we ended up in a situation where there were absolutely no beds for unhoused women and gender diverse people in our community. And I just want to clarify, because sometimes people get confused around unhoused women and women who are escaping domestic violence. We do have in our community Women's Crisis Services that has offered two emergency shelters, one in Cambridge, one in Kitchener, for many years. So we're not talking about that, but we're talking about unhoused women. And what we know is that unhoused women are really exposed to experiences of violence. Women's homelessness tends to be less visible than men's homelessness, but it's no less urgent, and it certainly looks different, and there need to be different considerations related to that. So across Canada, we know that only about 13% of shelter beds for folks that are unhoused are for women. So our community, there was a point this winter where there was no beds for women experiencing homelessness. And we know, we like going through the winter in Canada, going through this winter with very, very cold temperatures, it was really a dire situation for women in our community. What we know is that women experience homelessness because of histories of intimate partner violence, economic security, unpaid caregiver responsibilities, discrimination, so many different things. And we know that once someone is homeless, they have a heightened risk of sexual violence, sexual exploitation, and sex trafficking. And That is exactly what we saw happen in our community this year. With so many more unhoused women, we saw an increase in gender-based violence in our community because of that. So that's when we really started working with our community partners to talk about how gender-based violence and women's homelessness and issues of housing are so, so connected.
Something that came up in a recent application from you folks, we do read every word of the applications. Over 40% of clientele from the Sexual Assault Support Center were identifying as racialized, and another 40 plus percent as part of the 2S LGBTQ plus community. When you start layering in some of those other identities and experiences, that trauma can look really different. What kinds of unique barriers do some of these communities face when trying to access services?
That is an important question for so many reasons, and also so important because the United Way has supported, in particular, our services related to trying to make all our supports for equity-deserving groups, so members of the 2S LGBTQIA plus community, Black survivors, racialized survivors, have prioritized access. So that has been something that has been such a blessing to us, because so many of the folks that use our services are from marginalized communities. The reality is that when, like specifically, let's talk about 2S LGBTQ plus survivors. So many folks have experiences of homophobia and transphobia when they've accessed healthcare services, law enforcement, and that hasn't been a welcoming environment. And you can only imagine the intimate nature of sexual violence and how you have to feel like you're in a very safe, supportive place to be able to disclose those experiences, get support, try to seek justice, healing. And so simply having a really safe space is important, but then also staff that are culturally competent when it comes to issues for the rainbow community. One of the things that I'm really proud of is when folks reach out to our center for support, one of the things that our intake worker talks to them about is whether they would actually like to have support from a counselor who's part of the rainbow community. And the same thing for Black or racialized survivors. We ask that question because the same kinds of experience happen for racialized survivors. A lot of services aren't culturally aware, let alone culturally safe. Sometimes, you know, a survivor's culture, religion, it can be very nuanced. Like if you're supporting someone who is from a collectivist society and the nuances of how that looks, how sexual violence looks like in that community is very different than maybe the North American context that we're used to. We know that Black or Indigenous racialized folks might have had interaction with police or legal systems that were harmful. And so that is really present for them when they're considering reporting abuse, or, you know, their cultures, they might have a fear of bringing shame to their families or their communities because of a culture where sexual violence is taboo. There's so many nuances to supporting survivors from different cultural groups, be it like racial groups or rainbow survivors. And so that is something that we're very cognizant of its ask. And we try to have counselors who represent the diversity of our community. And we also have specialized services. So we have support groups for Black and racialized survivors. And we do those groups in partnership with Kind Minds. We have support groups for the rainbow community in partnership with Spectrum. So we try to really have wraparound care for all survivors in our community, but really understanding the barriers that diverse survivors face and having the appropriate supports for them.
And just thinking here about how each of those organizations, like you mentioned, Kind Minds Family Wellness as one, that they have like very specific skills or experiences, relationships that they have with, in this case, the Black community, where you and your team have your experiences and skills in terms of supporting folks who've experienced trauma. So being able to work with a variety of different groups, like that isn't the only one you folks work with. You're also engaged with other different service providers to with each having sort of a bringing something to the table.
Absolutely. And gender-based violence is an issue that impacts everyone in our community across different socioeconomic groups, across racial groups, across our whole community. So it's really important. We really value working with especially grassroots organizations that are working directly with communities impacted. That is such an important component of our work.
Yeah, and certainly, as you know, from a funder perspective at United Way, where we recognize like the challenges that those small grassroots organizations have in terms of running their operations, and there is a significant value in terms of those relationships and the understanding they have to those cultural community groups. That without some of those organizations, how much more challenging would it be to be able to get connected to an organization like the Sexual Assault Support Center?
That's a good question. And what I would say is, I think that we know that when we are connected directly with the diversity of our community, we see a much more, many more clients representing the diversity of our community come forward. In recent years, we've shared with the United Way, in particular because of what United Way funds for us, more than 40% of the survivors who reach out to us are racialized. More than 40% of the survivors that reach out to us are part of the 2S LGBTQ plus community. But there's a lot more work. We're not saying that we have reached all groups. There's a lot more to be done because a lot of the times, we serve the broader community, but we also know that the folks most in need and service are usually the ones who don't have a lot of other resources. And so we do tend to see folks, a lot of students, for instance, who wouldn't otherwise have access to the kinds of supports that we offer.
There was a word you used earlier, and to like circle back to it, because a lot of times I think when we talk about services that the Sexual Assault Support Center provides, other organizations provide, you're talking about some pretty significant trauma that people have experienced and processing trauma. And on the flip side of that, and the word you used, resilience, the value in that in terms of that their healing process. Is there anything you wanted to sort of highlight for that for our listeners?
It is a really important word. It's actually, I was going over our mission statement in our head, and it's actually part of our mission statement. Survivors of sexual violence have endured so much. The reason that we talk about survivors, sometimes the word victim is used, sometimes survivor, they have endured a lot and they have come through the other side. And so sometimes when someone reaches out, they don't necessarily feel like they've come out the other side. I mean, that's why we exist, to help them, support them in moving through, in moving towards healing. But the strength that so many of the survivors have had through the process, I think it's to the average person in our community, some of the experiences that the folks have that access our services would almost seem unbelievable. And I say this, I sit in my office and I see our anti-human trafficking program, for instance. That office is down the hall from my office. And I'll see young folks, 13, 14, coming in to get supports in that program. And then I think of my nieces and nephews and how they're the same age and how their life experiences have been so different. And so you think about what is the experience of a young person who was sexually exploited and trafficked from the age of 13, and that is the average age that someone is recruited into trafficking in Canada, and it's certainly representative of what we see in our community. Some of those survivors have sought support in various ways from our anti-human trafficking program for a number of years now. And some of them have gone back to school, some of them are opening their own businesses. You look at the resilience that they have, what they have been through, and how incredible they are as human beings. The strength that they've drawn upon, it's incredible. We really look at the resilience and look at the strength that folks have had to summon up to move forward in life. And it's one of the most powerful things that we see in the work that we do.
And yeah, and 13 as the average age. That's just that's stunning for folks who aren't familiar with the realities. That's like you used the word before, unbelievable. Like it but the facts speak for themselves.
Yeah,
And
I
with
wanted to, I was just to say, I want to throw in there that a lot of folks still with the issue of trafficking think it's not that common. I think it's really important that our community know that our community, Waterloo Region, is the third largest city, like third most impacted by human trafficking in Canada. So the numbers are high. Every year, our anti-human trafficking program serves about 130 folks in our community.
So what are some practical steps that our listeners, other community members can take if they witness or suspect gender-based violence in their community?
Gender-based violence is an umbrella term, and that means, that could mean sexual violence. That could mean sexual exploitation or trafficking. That could mean domestic violence. And so obviously there's nuanced responses. I do think in particular around sexual violence, sexual exploitation, obviously there's the piece where you have to assess immediate safety. You could be witnessing something where 911 is the appropriate, response. But one of the things that we do a lot of training about, and I know that our team trained folks through something of the United Way not that long ago, we do bystander intervention training. So that kind of training really just empowers people, everyday people, to become part of the solution. That helps them recognize problematic behaviors and take like safe, effective actions to disrupt or prevent harm instead of saying, silent or passive, because sometimes folks, they want to do something, but they don't know, like, is it their place? Do they want to interfere? It's none of their business. They don't want to do the wrong thing. Sometimes someone really wants to help, but they don't, the fear of doing the wrong thing prevents them. And so bystander training helps folks recognize what sexual violence is and to be able to recognize when it's happening. And then it talks about how to overcome those barriers to intervention, those things that make you afraid to intervene. And so it involves a lot of role playing and different scenarios that give you the practical tools. People often talk about the 5 Ds when it comes to intervention, but do they directly want to intervene? Do they want to distract? Do they want to delegate someone else to address the issue? And the other two are delay, document. But there's lots of different ways to train on bystander intervention. And our public education staff would do so much better than I could at doing that work. Being able to intervene safely and appropriately is what those trainings. But then the piece after that is how do you support the survivor? And again, it's very much about providing options, information, support, never directing the survivor what to do. Gender-based violence is when someone's used power and control over someone else, and you never want to be someone else that's coming in and then also assuming power in the situation. So everything from letting survivors know about the Sexual Assault Support Center, SASC, letting them know about women's crisis services and the shelter services that could be available. Letting them know about 24-hour support lines. Our center has a 24-hour support line. Women's Crisis Center Services has a 24-hour support line. There's so many different pieces. And really, directing to the community-based organizations doing this work is one of the best ways that you can support someone because we can talk through options for for healing. We can talk through options related to justice, medical options, so many different pieces. We work to really, once we're connected with a survivor, to wrap them in our community's care.
Thank you so much, Sarah. What would you say from an organization perspective that the Sexual Assault Support Center needs most right now in terms of community support?
When you ask that question, there's a ton of things that go through my brain right away. Overall, services that support survivors of gender-based violence have been extremely taxed in our community and beyond for a very long time. So, what folks in the community might know is that last year, the region declared gender-based violence an epidemic in our community. Over the last number of years, if you look at the reality around the demand for supports for survivors of sexual violence, the demand for shelter beds for women experiencing domestic violence, the lack of options for housing for survivors of sex trafficking, there's so many different needs that this needs to be a political priority at every level of government. So the regional government declared it an epidemic, needs to be a priority there. It needs to be a priority for local funders. It needs to be a priority at the provincial level because the demand for our services has tripled in the last decade, but the government funding has, when you account for inflation, has actually decreased in that time. So help amplify the messages from organizations that are serving survivors of gender-based violence. Follow them on socials. Repost what they share. Make it an election issue. You know, we're heading into another federal election. What does the federal party that you're thinking of supporting, what do they have to say about services related to gender-based violence? But folks can visit our website to learn out to learn more. Obviously, there's so many ways that folks can get involved. We have an incredible volunteer program if folks want to be engaged, and that's how I started at the center in 2002 as a volunteer on our 24-hour support line.
Thank you for joining us for this important conversation with Sarah Castleman from the Sexual Assault Support Center of Waterloo Region. At SASC, they believe in wrapping survivors in community care, walking alongside them with respect, and advocating for systems that honor dignity, equity, and healing. United Way is proud to support organizations like SASC because we know that tackling gender-based violence requires more than response. It demands prevention, education, and long-term commitment to change. If this episode moved you, please share it, talk about it, and support the work being done in our region. Join us next time as we continue to highlight the stories of resilience and the programs your support makes possible. Until then, let's keep building a community where everyone is safe, heard, and supported. United is the way forward.